Welcome to Managed Care Cast, a podcast from the American Journal of Managed Care. My name is Brooke McCormick, assistant editor of the American Journal of Managed Care. On this episode of Managed Care Cast, we're talking with Dr. Dennis Scanlon, the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Accountable Care and a health policy professor at Penn State University. Topics we are discussing include President Biden's recent prescription drug proposals, prior authorization practices, price transparency, and the potential impact of health policy on the upcoming election. Welcome. Can you introduce yourself and tell us about the work that you do?
Sure. Dennis Scanlon. I am professor of health policy at Penn State University, and do teaching and research on in the sphere of population health, value-based care, health economics, cover a lot of topics, some clinical areas like diabetes, and then other broad topics such as healthcare pricing, you know, across a variety of different dimensions, insurance plans, pharmaceuticals, that sort of thing.
In terms of the prescription drug proposals outlined by President Biden, how likely is it for them to pass in an election year? What factors contribute to their potential success or failure?
So it's always tough to predict political outcomes, right? Because it's a lot that goes into play in terms of arriving at things that ultimately have to pass through Congress when it comes to healthcare. I guess I would say this. I think in prior years, when you're looking at something like restraints on, say, pharmaceutical pricing or some of the other proposals related to prescription drugs, I always go back to kind of who are the potential winners and who are the potential losers. And when you're focused on a particular industry like the pharmaceutical industry, you know, that's the industry who oftentimes will be subject to significant pushback and rally the supporters for that industry, right? Saying that any restrictions are going to cause harm because we won't be able to innovate in terms of new drugs that we provide. There's not going to be enough for R&D. You know, you're going to make access less possible, so forth and so on. So oftentimes, I think those are very difficult things to get through. Having said that, I think we do seem to be now in an environment that even on both parties, I think there's a little bit of an agreement that competition and consolidation in healthcare is something that needs to be addressed. And ultimately, when we look at pricing of anything, right, it's a function of supply and demand, and it's a function of consolidation. And so I guess I'd say I won't go out on a limb and predict that, you know, any political a proposal will pass, you know, swimmingly, easily through Congress. But what I will say is I do think there is more of a focus now and an awareness that maybe we should look a little bit more at consolidation, whether things are truly competitive. And I would say in this particular industry, there's been some signals of that. There's been a call for the antitrust agencies like the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission to think differently about the way it enforces the nation's antitrust laws, the Sherman Act, the Clayton Act. In this space, there's also been the FTC and others that have been addressing some of the middlemen, and so to speak, and others that sort of control the supply chain and the pricing chain in pharma. So pharmacy benefit managers, for example. And there's been a recent lawsuit by an employee from a self-insured employer who has basically said, you as the employer and the PBM that you hired did not represent our interest by allowing the prices that I have to pay as the employee to be significantly higher than they should be. And that's a very interesting case as well. So I guess I just to provide a summary or a wrap up to a long answer, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see.
Considering the potential challenges in passing prescription drug proposals during an election year, what alternative short-term strategies or compromises might be explored to address the issue of high drug prices?
Well, again, I think we're seeing a little bit of this in the discussion. We currently have antitrust laws that are on the books that we have agencies that are designed to enforce. And in the United States, you know, going back, I think it was 1913 to the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act, It's to make sure that we don't have anti-competitive policies that are in restraint of trade or that allows monopolistic control such that it leads to excessive pricing. Those laws are already on the books. We have agencies and entities that enforce those, the Department of Justice, the Federal Trade Commission, and each state has their entities as well. So I think what we'll see in lieu of necessarily policies that have to pass Congress, will there be a change in the way those laws are enforced by those entities and agencies? And the Biden administration has come out with currently some instructions to basically tell the antitrust agencies, I want you to think about this a little bit differently. Or how are we enforcing our current laws? And I believe it was announced that there was a new position. I forget the name of the position, a kind of competitive, healthcare competitive person who was named, with the idea that across all agencies, whether that's CMS, whether that's Health and Human Services, or any other federal agency that deals in healthcare, to think about this topic of competition and to think about how we might address it. So, through things like executive orders, through things like instructions to existing entities and how they may or may not consider enforcing existing laws, that would be one way in which things could be done potentially. Always subject to legal challenge, right? Because somebody could say you've overstepped DOJ or FTC. But again, when you're enforcing these kinds of things as a regulatory body, there's always subjectivity and it's also based on data.
How may health policy or insurance come into play during the upcoming election?
I mean, I think what are the fundamental issues that people are concerned about? Constituents, citizens of the country, politicians on both sides of the aisle, even though they don't always agree on kind of what the issues are. I do think a couple things, though. It's still early in this election cycle. I'm hearing less of the word Obamacare and Affordable Care Act than we did 3, 4 years ago, and certainly than we did about 8 years ago, right? And so in some sense, that's taking a buzzword that stood for many, many different things. And we'll see if it persists, but we're not hearing as much, at least to this point. So some of the issues in what's potentially good about that is that maybe we will actually start replacing a single term with the issues that really people want to sort of address. Is it access to care? Is it affordability of care? Is it the cost and the price of insurance? Is it the way in which insurance policies are structured and some of the concerns about particular policies, such as out-of-pocket maximums, high-deductible plans, the cost of the various, silver, bronze, and gold medal plans on the affordable care exchanges and so forth and so on. So I think generally we're still going to get down to primarily the issue of healthcare is very expensive, and that results in significant cost to the American public, to employers, of having coverage, which provides them with access, and then limits on access because of either those who don't have coverage or those who have coverage in these plans that have significantly high deductibles and cost-sharing components. I think we'll continue to hear about drug pricing. I do think we'll probably hear a little bit more about this topic of consolidation and maybe excess consolidation, which leads to, the potential anti-competitive concerns that I mentioned earlier.
What regulatory measures, if any, should be considered to standardize or streamline prior authorization practices in Medicare Advantage plans?
I think the nature of this question probably comes from the concern that, MA plans have grown significantly, right? More than 50% of Medicare. They're quite popular, but there does appear to be a fair amount of variation in terms of how they, within the guidelines, within kind of the rates, within the trends, within the benchmarks, within the star ratings, ultimately how, the benefits play out that are offered, but then also how members of these plans experience, sort of the benefits when they get down to utilization. And some of the concerns are variation over these prior authorization practices. I think fundamentally, what CMS and others need to look at is what's the purpose of prior auth in the context of an insurance plan, and when is the legitimate purpose? Is it in how is it being sort of enforced in a way that meets its goal, right? So prior authorization, making sure that a service, an image, kind of a procedure, anything that somebody needs has a medical necessity to it, because there's plenty of evidence in literature that suggests, for example, that advanced diagnostic imaging happens in cases where it's not clinically necessary, or at least not yet necessary, because something in kind of a step therapy fashion has not been attempted. And patients and people get concerned about that. I actually have somebody in our own self-insured benefit plan who has reached out to me about this very topic, right? And it's a difficult topic, because to an individual who may have a delay in an authorization or a refusal, that's a big deal. On the flip side, again, there is this evidence that some things maybe should not be advanced kind of at the current stage until sort of it follows a clinical progression. But I think there's a lot of variation, or concern that there's variation in Medicare Advantage plans and how this plays out. And so I think really a need to look at the internal policies of the MA plans, clinically how they enforce these, and ultimately making sure that they're done for the right reasons, as opposed to reasons that will purely be driven by a profit motive, by the insurers.
How does a lack of price transparency impact patients? What impact would increased price transparency have?
What is interesting in the pharmaceutical space is this recent lawsuit, which I think was, I don't know if it was filed here in New Jersey. I know either Wisconsin or New Jersey, but I will say, in a lot of these topics, we didn't talk about price transparency. And when we think about anti-competitive practices, or potential anti-competitive practices in enforcement, and we think about the role of public policy, a lot of these discussions happen because we feel the market is not functioning properly. And part of the reason people feel the market is not functioning properly is a lack of transparent information. What's interesting in that particular lawsuit is, as I understand it, an employee of a corporation who was offered a self-insured health plan basically said, "Why am I paying X for this drug when I did some research and I found out that if I paid for the drug without insurance, or if I look at what Mark Cuban's Cost Plus would charge, or some other discount card, I would pay a lot less. And so, why is my insurance more expensive?" Right? That was a level of transparency that an individual, through doing their own research, was able to uncover. And as a result, it's now led to a lawsuit, which has gotten quite a bit of attention. We have other major transparency gaps. A couple of years ago, the government came out with the hospital price transparency requirement. Most people I know think that that has been, to date, a significant failure. It's really hard to deal with these machine-readable files. It's impossible for a consumer to know what the cost would be. I'll give another example. In my own family, for my son who just relocated to another town, I called in trying to help him find a provider for just a urgent care, like a routine urgent care visit. I wanted to know, would you take this insurance, and what is the cost of that visit? And you can't get a straight answer, right? So we face a lot of lack of transparency. And because of that lack of transparency, many people feel that is the systemic problem, which leads to the high cost. So I think, in addition to antitrust regulation and enforcement and everything else, there is an element of, can we get more sunshine, more transparency on this? And the last thing I would say related to that is, in addition to that lawsuit, what we're also seeing is, for example, in the pharmaceutical space, a heavy scrutiny on third-party kind of middle actors, if you will, in the supply chain, like pharmacy benefit managers. What are their practices? How do they decide to put different scripts on formulary. What are the cost and out of cost pocket to patients? What is happening with this rebate? Is there truly 100% pass through back to the self-insured employer or the plan sponsor? Or kind of are there, yes, there's 100% pass through, but there's some fine print where other dollars are flowing as well. So I guess I would say in many of these areas and questions, when we talk about competition, when we talk about pricing, we should remember that a big driver of this is lack of transparency. Or stated differently, if we had more transparency, economists would believe that prices would more likely converge to a fair price because of that transparency.
To learn more about health policy, visit ajmc.com or see the show notes. To get in touch with us, you can email info@ajmc.com or follow us on X @ajmc_journal. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and rate us.